Leading us in tonight's program will be our brother Steve Hornhart of the Salisbury, Adelaide, South Australia Ecclesia. And it's entitled, Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. And in connection with tonight's class, he asks, we read Psalms 139, verses 1 through 14. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down-sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. For thou hast possessed my reins. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. Without further ado, I'd like to call on our brother Steve Hornhart and his class. Thank you.
Well, good evening, brothers and sisters and young people. Very nice to be with you once again. And what we plan to do this evening is something quite different to what we've been doing in the first session of each of these days. Not only will it be a different subject other than the apocalypse, but also what we plan to do this evening is to tackle a subject, a presentation that is much lighter, and we plan to involve, as we go through our program, not only the older brothers and sisters here, but also some of our young ones that we see scattered around the hall this evening. Now, brothers and sisters, young people, the expression or the quotation we have there, taken from Psalm 139, verse 14, fearfully made, wonderful are thy works. Now, we could do a lot of things with that title. There is a whole raft of subject areas with respect to God's glorious creation that we could tap into and stand in awe, agog, at the way in which God has designed the creation about us. What we plan to do, however, this evening is something that might be a little different than you might anticipate with that title that is there. We plan to go through, as we weave through our evening this evening, we plan to involve three things in our topic. And that is, what we want to do is we want to find out what makes a good listener. Now, there is a saying that many hear, but only a few listen. So we're going to look at some of the characteristics of good listening. Probably would have been better to have this subject on the first night. But never mind. Never mind. We'll give you those skills this evening, and then who knows? You might be able to tap into some of those things that we deal with tomorrow and the day after with a bit more substance, you see. So we're going to look at what constitutes a good listener. What we want to do then is to go into the record for a few moments and have a look at one of the classic characters of the Bible who is way, way, way up there as a listener. And then what we want to do is then have a look at the marvelous mechanism that God has created to allow us to listen to his word and to listen to each other. And that is to have a look at the ear. So what constitutes a good listener? Who in the Bible was seen as one of the greatest listeners there ever was? And have a look at this amazing mechanism with respect to what God has created. Now, before we have a look at our subject matter, I want to present before you just two quotations to think about as a platform to launch into our presentation this evening. Proverbs 20 and verse 12. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, Yahweh has made them both. And we could say, absolutely. And as we said a moment ago, with the ear and the eye, when we know something about it, we are in awe of that amazing mechanism. But you see, brothers and sisters, there comes with this knowledge that Yahweh made them both a moral accountability and a moral responsibility. It's all very well to say, amazing. When you therefore go to Psalm 94 and verse 9, here is the sobering quotation that couples with that one we just read. He that planted the ear, as marvellous as it is, shall he not hear? How good is the hearing of God who made the very mechanism that we have attached to each side of our head and use every day? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? And that really, brothers and sisters, should make us very reverently take stock of what we do, what we say, because of the hearing and the seeing of our Heavenly Father. Who would be, perhaps this is a question for some of our younger ones. We've got anyone here that's under 12? What have you done with all the 12-year-olds? Well, they all somewhere else, are they? Why? All right, is anybody under 14? Oh, hooray, I've got somebody to work with through the evening. Yes, I think I know those young people as well. All righty, some of you youngies over there who are under 14, give me, that group that put their hand up, give me the first person that you would think about in the Bible who you reckon was an outstanding listener. Who would you think of? And the adults can enter into this as you think about who you might think is an outstanding listener in the Bible. Give you a clue. Think Old Testament. Moses was very good, yes. Somebody better. Shouldn't say better than Moses. Pardon me? Daniel, very good. Oh, Samuel. Who said Samuel? That was your accent. Samuel. It is Samuel, actually. That is exactly what I've got here. I'll keep asking the question until you give me the answer that I'm looking for. Absolutely, Samuel. And therefore, brothers and sisters, when we have a look at Samuel as a remarkable listener, the thing we know about Samuel is that when he comes into the record, he is hallmarked as a listener. Therefore, in 1 Samuel 3, five times, this is the stamp of this boy. Here am I. Here am I. And five times Samuel comes into the record with that characteristic, brothers and sisters. Five is the number of grace. Well, where did Samuel get that remarkable characteristic of a good listener? Well, he got it from his mother. And his mother was Hannah. And Hannah's name means grace. So there we are. Five times Samuel is earmarked. Sorry about the play on words, but earmarked like his mother. Now come with me, if you will, to 1 Samuel 3 and look at this wonderful legacy that Samuel's mother, Hannah, left this wonderful boy. 1 Samuel 1 we'll look at. What a wonderful woman she was. Well, verse 24, 1 Samuel 1. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine, and brought him unto the house of Yahweh in Shiloh. And the child was a child, as it is in the Hebrew. Oh, that's heart-wrenching. That is heart-wrenching, brothers and sisters. This three-year-old little boy, and the record says the child was a child, as if emphasising that she's going to give him away in a tabernacle where awful men lived. The child was a child, and they slew a bullock, brought the child to Eli, and she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood before thee praying unto Yahweh. And verse 27, for this child I prayed unto Yahweh, for this child I prayed, and Yahweh hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore also have I lent him to Yahweh. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to Yahweh. Now, what I want you to note, brothers and sisters, is verse 27 and 28. There are three words that are the same Hebrew word. The word asked in verse 27 is the same Hebrew word as lent in verse 28, twice used. And in the Hebrew, there's a play on words. And this is the characteristic that would be passed down to this child who was a child. In the Hebrew, this play on words reads this way, of verse 27 and 28. I asked and God heard. God asked and I heard. What a lovely thing. So when God spoke, she listened. When she spoke, God listened. So there, brothers and sisters, is Samuel's name, heard of God. And he got those wonderful characteristics from his mother. Now, here's a question. 1 Samuel 3, five times, here am I, and that would be the stamp of this young boy. Question we could ask, why was it in 1 Samuel 3 that Samuel could hear and not the high priest Eli? I mean, they're both in close proximity with each other. Samuel hears something, Eli hasn't got a clue. Well, the answer is in 1 Samuel 3, verse 2 and 3, and in 1 Samuel 3, verse 9 and 10. Now, I'm going to put that up on the screen. Why could Samuel hear and not Eli? Well, in 1 Samuel 3 and verse 2, we read, and it came to pass at that time when Eli was laid down in his place. Oh, Eli, you've got a place. But it's a dark place. It's a dim, misty, murky place with no clarity of light or vision. In verse 3, and ere the lamp of God went out in the temple of Yahweh where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down. Ah, Samuel has got a place also, brothers and sisters. But we don't get the clarity of the place where Samuel was with the authorized translation. Let me put Rotherham's translation on the screen. Listen to this. And Samuel was lying down in the temple of Yahweh where the ark of God was. Of course, Samuel wasn't sleeping next to the ark, we know that. But it's emphasized, brothers and sisters, in this next verse. You see in verse 9, therefore Eli said unto Samuel, go and lie down, and it shall be that if he shall call thee, that thou shalt say, speak, Yahweh, for thy servant heareth. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Where the ark of Yahweh was? Closer than that, brothers and sisters, because in the next verse, and Yahweh came and stood right next to that little boy. That's how Samuel was able to hear. God was right next to him. And Samuel was right next to God. Young people, if you want to hear God and you want God to hear you, you stand right next to God and you'll hear the softest whisper and God will hear your whispering to him. What a lovely thing that really is. Well, that didn't stop with Samuel as a boy. He carried that characteristic from his mother all the way through his life. And then when he became a man, those same characteristics were exhibited in this young boy's life. Have a quick look. I'm only going to spend 1 or 2 minutes on this and then move in to our subject with respect to hearing. Have a look at 1 Samuel 9 and verse 15 through 16. His characteristic of hearing stayed with him right to the end of his days. As a boy, speak Yahweh, for thy servant heareth. Well, 1 Samuel 9 and verse 15 through to 16. Now Yahweh had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul, came saying. Now, of course, in margin, and some of us would be aware of this, in your margin in the Hebrew it is, Yahweh revealed the ear of Samuel. Rotherham translates that expression, Yahweh had unveiled the ear of Samuel. It's a beautiful expression. You just picture Yahweh reaching down with his hand, if we can use that expression, and he just sweeps back the long Nazarite hair that Samuel had, grey probably as it was with his age. God sweeps aside, unveiling the ear of Samuel, the old man now, and whispered in his ear. And then when you turn the page in 1 Samuel 8 and verse 21, you hear that Samuel, like his mother, I asked and God heard. God asked and I heard. Just like his mother in 1 Samuel 8 and verse 21. And Samuel heard all the words of the people and he rehearsed them in the ears of Yahweh. Two people speaking to one another. Samuel rehearsing his fears and his concerns and his joys and his sorrows in the ears of God, and God reciprocating that. That's wonderful, brothers and sisters. That's what friends do. They speak to each other and they listen to each other. Well, the last question we pose in the context of this remarkable boy and this remarkable man is this. Samuel comes into the record five times. Here am I. But Eli comes into the record, brothers and sisters. This is why he couldn't hear. This is why he couldn't hear in 1 Samuel 3. Eli comes into the record totally, totally the opposite. Final reference, turn with me to 1 Samuel 1, verses 12 through 14. Oh, what a tragedy this was with Eli. Totally, totally the antithesis of Samuel. Well, verse 12, 1 Samuel 1, we read these words. And it came to pass, as she, Hannah, continued praying before Yahweh, that Eli marked her mouth. Now, Hannah, she spoke in her heart. Only her lips moved. But her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she was drunk. And Eli, in verse 14, said to her, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away the wine from thee. Brothers and sisters, Eli could not have been further from the truth. Hannah drunk? No way, brothers and sisters. And here's Eli coming to the record, making wrong judgments. And that was the mark of his declining years. Making wrong judgments. And brethren and sisters, when we make wrong judgments, you can bet your boots that it's because we're not hearing the word. Eli can't hear the words. That's why he made wrong judgments. What a sobering lesson. But Samuel, oh, the total opposite, brothers and sisters. What a lovely lesson that is, as we now use that as a little springboard and then go into our subject and have a look at this idea of listening. All right. And we've got some young people here. We've got some not so young people here. And we've got some ears up on the screen. How many ears have we got there? How many ears are on that screen? Seven? You see, you must look. Don't expect things to be there. How many are there? No. 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 Not nine, not eight, not seven. Not ten. Not
11.
Not 11. How many ears are there? Okay. One. Two. Three. Oh, come on. Let me have a little bit of fun. You look, sometimes you see what you expect to see. You see. Alrighty. Now, some of our young ones here, those in those tables over there, we've got a quotation there. He that hath an ear, let him hear. Where's that from? Yell it out. Pardon me? Oh, actually, yes, you are correct. Yes, yes, you are correct. Not totally, but good enough to probably get, oh, I don't know, 4 out of 10. He that hath an ear, let him hear. What book of the Bible is that taken from? Absolutely, wouldn't you know it, Revelation. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the ecclesias. Now, brothers and sisters, hearing with the ear and listening with the mind, we can't stop sound coming into our ears. We can't stop all the cacophony going around us. However, we can do something with sound that comes in. We can choose to ignore it, or we can choose to take it in, process it, and do something with it. Now, there's been a number of researches or research material done on adults and listening. One research program discovered that in an average audience, and you look pretty average to me, in an average audience, audiences' listening efficiency is about 25%. That means that we only remember about a quarter of what we hear immediately after we hear it. In fact, some research has suggested that adults' hearing ability or listening capacity can be as low as 12%, which means you only remember 12% of what you've just heard. I think brethren and sisters and Christadelphians have a better listening efficiency than that, because we're dealing with the Word of God and we really do try to stretch our minds. So the listening efficiency, 25%. That's not very good. Another form of research suggests that the average audience tunes in for only 10 seconds in every minute, and then they tune out for 50 seconds. So they come back for 10, go out for 50. They come back for 10, yes, Steve's still on the white horse, I'm going to tune out and I'll wait for the colour to change. So you're in for 10, you're out for 50. Now, we can do that because we've got an ability, which we'll talk about in a moment. The trouble is, as you tune in for 10, you tune out for 50, you go on mental holidays, you go to Paris, you go to Rome, you go to London, you do the gardening, you think about what's going to be on the meal table tomorrow morning, all these things running through our minds. The trouble is, when we go on mental holidays, the mental holidays can become so attractive that when we go out for 50, we never come back. So we've got to make sure that we train our mind and our ears to stay with it. Now, the reason that we can tune in for 10 and tune out for 50 and kind of be there is that research has suggested that the average speaker, you might find this very, very strange from an Australian point of view, that the average speaker speaks at a speed of about 120 words a minute. Can you believe that? I have been accused from Canadians and Americans of the fact that Australians speak too fast. No way do we speak too fast. Have you heard Jason? Where is he? On cue. That. He doesn't even know what's going on. But he's laughing. So the average speaker speaks at about, 120 words a minute. Now, you all in this room have an ability to listen speed or think speed at 1,000 words a minute. You can do that. So if you think Australians are speaking too fast, then lift your game, because you can speak at one, you can hear at 1,000 words a minute. So if I'm speaking at 120 words a minute and you can think speed at 1,000, I want to know what you're doing with your extra 800 or so words a minute. I know what you're doing. You're tuning in for 10 and nicking off for 50 and then coming back. Now, brothers and sisters, with respect to hearing, let's talk for a few moments about the ear and sound. Now, we're talking about, I'm speaking to you now and you are hearing words. What happens? Is there something that magically flies from my mouth and just in some wonderful fairy-like way tinkles into your little ears and goes through the auditory canal and just taps on your tympanic membrane or your eardrum? What really happens when we speak and you listen? Do things fly very far? Well, actually, no, they don't. If I was to do this, I think most of us heard that, yes? Right at the back? You hear that? Now, if I was to do this, I can hear that. Can you? That's so light. Would you do me a favour, Peter? Would you just very fairy-like tap? Did you hear that? No, see? Did you hear that, Peter? Oh, God. Did you hear that, Dan?
Yes.
Tell me lies. Of course you didn't hear it. All righty. Now, what we did... Thank you, Peter, for that. Now, what we did, of course, is we created a pressure wave or a shock wave. And what happened was nothing's travelled very far except we've just bounced molecules in the air together. And it's a bit like casting a stone in a pond. When you throw a stone in a pond, the ripples are quite dramatic. And as they go further out, they just peter out and they disappear. And that's what happens with pressure waves of air molecules. So when we speak or you hear a noise, it's these little molecules. They don't travel very far. They just go bang, 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 bang together all along. And all of a sudden, the further they go, they become less intense. And in the end, these little air molecules just pop against your eardrum or your tympanic membrane. How sensitive is the ear to these little tap, tap, taps of these molecules in the air? Well, experts tell us that the ear is sensitive to a change in pressure of 1 times 10 to the minus 10 atmospheres. Now, who under 18 knows what that means? Does anybody know what that means? I have no idea what that means. We had somebody in the audience on one occasion that did scuba diving, and he knew what that means. I have no idea. Pressure of 1 times 10 to the minus 10 atmospheres. So I thought I might simplify it for both me and you. So what I did was I then converted it and says, well, the ear is sensitive to 0.00901 atmospheres. Ah, that made no difference. I still have no idea what that means. So what I thought, well, I'll do something maybe I do understand. Perhaps we'll turn it into altitude. So what we did, the ear is sensitive and is comparable to a change in altitude of less than 1,000th of a millimetre. So when you change in altitude 1,000th of a millimetre, the ear recognises that. Now, I had a look around for something that was 1,000th of a millimetre. I couldn't find anything that I could see. So what I got was I got a piece of paper. Now, this piece of paper is 1/6th of a millimetre. We're talking the ear can sense a change in altitude of 1,000th of a millimetre. So I've got this altitude elevator, you see, 1/6th of a millimetre. Now, I'm going to put this altitude elevator on the floor, and I'm going to change my altitude as I step up onto this by 1/6th of a millimetre. Some of you probably out there saying, Steve, you'll need more than a piece of paper, let me tell you. So here we go. I'm going to change my altitude. I'm going to step up onto this paper. Might take me a while. I'm not in good condition. So let me just take a few breaths. Here we go. I'm going to change my altitude by 1/6th of a millimetre and see if my ear changes or senses. Here we go. Oh, heck. The air is thinner up here, actually. I feel sorry for you 6-foot brethren. So, brothers and sisters, by stepping up onto this piece of paper, my ear has sensed the change in altitude. What a remarkable apparatus it is. Well, let's have a look at a couple of remarkable things with respect to the ear. Now, some of you young people are sitting there, oh, Uncle Steve, you're not going to go through the middle ear and talk about the hammer and the anvil and the stapes or the little stirrup. Well, I might say a couple of things about that, but we're going to go somewhere where you may not have gone before. Now, what we've got is we've got the outer ear, the middle ear, and the inner ear. Now, we've got pressure waves coming through air. But these pressure waves, these molecules tapping, need to go through air, but they need then to be transferred into fluid. But that's a different impedance. If you've ever had the situation where you've got your children swimming in a swimming pool and you want to go home and they're all swimming underwater and you are there leaning over the pool and yelling, we're going home, and they're underwater, you might as well you're wasting the precious time of day, because 99.9% of that sound will bounce back. Different impedance. So what God has done is built a mechanism whereby we have an interface, and the interface is bone. So we're going to transfer sound from air into fluid using an interface which actually amplifies the sound. So sound is going to go from air. It's going to be amplified through this interface of bone, and then it's going to go into the fluid, and the brain is going to recognise that as sound. What an amazing mechanism this is. Well, let's, all right, tap into this outer ear, made up of the auricle, the external auditory canal, and the ceruminous gland. Now, for those of you who don't know what the ceruminous gland is, it's the gland inside the ear that produces earwax. We'll talk more about that in a moment, but not for too long, because probably not a very uplifting subject. Earwax. Now, having a look at the auricle, brothers and sisters, young people, the outer ear, well, the auricle is that floppy bit that's on the side there. It's attached to the side of our head by those three muscles. In fact, those three muscles are part of the facial muscles. Now, is there any young fellow here that is able to wiggle his ears? Just a young fellow. Who can wiggle their ears? You're not a young bloke. Come on, you bloke. Come here. Can you wiggle your ears? Hang on, let me have a look. No, don't do it yet. I haven't seen it yet. Hang on. I'm going to do a bit of a judgment here. Okay, who can do it? What's your name? G'day, Taylor. Now, let's have a look at this. Hang on, here we go. My word, that is amazing. This lad. Have you got a girlfriend? I tell you what, you get next to a girl and you do that, mate, and you are... That is the characteristic that most girls would die for, let me say. Well, there you go, Caleb and the ear wiggling. Fantastic. Well, you know, brothers and sisters, we've got these facial muscles on the face. Now, there are a whole raft of them, and there are two facial muscles which really are essential for life. The first one is the muscles around the eye. Now, without those, of course, we wouldn't be able to blink. And if we couldn't blink, we couldn't clean the eye. And if we couldn't clean the eye, we'd go blind. Anybody know what else? What other? There's only two that are essential for life. Anyone know what the other muscle is or are for essentiality of life? Around the mouth. Without which we wouldn't be able to suckle as infants and we would die. So we've got two muscles, only really two muscles on our face that are essential for life. The rest of them are just optional extras, not essential. And God's given us a face with all these muscles that are not essential so that if we want to show happiness, we can smile. If we want to show sadness, we can drop down our lips. If we want to show somebody that we're anxious, frustrated, a little bit angry, we can grimace. If we want to show somebody that we're thoughtful and thinking about what they're saying, we can frown. God has given us a face that's alive, and we can share with each other the joys and the sorrows and the difficulties as we go through a journey. That's a wonderful thing. Not essential, but God's given us. Despite what you might think, there's no other animal that's got this. Irrespective of what you might think about your dog or your cat, they cannot show these characteristics like we do. Now, there's an interesting little thing about the auricle, and that is this. Darwin's made a big thing about this. Now, you've got this little thing that they call the Darwin's tubercle. In fact, if you were to put your fingers about where that little arrow is there, you'll find that there's a couple of... Oh, I've got very prominent ones on both ears. Little bump. Can you feel those? Please say you've got one of these little bumps. Who can feel them? Just can you feel them? Little, it's called Darwin's chip, like a little, oh, I don't know, little bump. You all feel them? If you haven't got one, it doesn't matter. You probably hasn't evolved anyway, so... Now, Darwin made a big thing about this. He said, this is the crease where our ancestors who had floppy ears could prick them up, spin them around, and then flop them down again for the night. What an amazing thing. So that's how he says evolution took place. Well, I don't know what he does with a lizard because all they had was holes in their heads There was no ears with respect to lizards. So if you were ever feeding your dog one day, you'd be very respectful because they were here before us, according to Darwin, with their floppy ears. Well, brothers and sisters, the external auditory canal and the ceruminous gland is a very interesting little apparatus with respect to the outer ear. Now, there's the external auditory canal, and you'll find that along here, well, the measurement of that, it's not very big, approximately 25 millimetres long. Sorry about the metric system I'm endeavouring to introduce Americans to in order that they might get on board with the rest of the world. Approximately 25 millimetres long and about 7 millimetres in diameter is this auditory canal. And you can see these are the ceruminous glands which secrete the ear wax. Now, they're very important. They're laid in there like that. And it's important that we have that in there because inside the ear it can become very moist. And if it's so moist and humid and you don't have these glands secreting the wax, then bits could fall out or fall off. And it would be awful if you were having breakfast and that little tympanic membrane fell in your rice puffs, wouldn't it? And the way I've seen some of you eat, you probably wouldn't know the difference. Yes, so we have this earwax being produced by these ceruminous glands. And, of course, God has made sure that that's there because it's not nice for insects. Insects don't like that, so you don't have a lot of insects crawling inside your auditory canal. But the other remarkable thing, brothers and sisters and young people, is this, is that when the layers of skin come up, and you, I've got to be careful I use the right word, exfoliate, defoliate, trees defoliate, we exfoliate. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. I usually say... We defoliate trees. So when you exfoliate on the body, the epidermis just comes up like that and then the skin falls off or you scrub it off or what have you. So if inside the auditory canal, if you're having the skin exfoliating and you're having wax produced as well, why doesn't the ear clog up? Well, actually it does if it's not working properly because you need to go to the doctors and you get your ears syringed. But normally... it doesn't do that because inside of the auditory canal, instead of like the body, this comes up straight like that. Inside the ear, it actually moves sideways. So inside the ear, when you are exfoliating and the wax is produced, it's actually moving like that. And it's like a little conveyor belt. And so what they've done is they've done an experiment and they've put little foreign bodies or materials on the eardrum and they've found that the conveyor belt works very, very well. Now, who thought of that? Of course, it was God in the creation, as marvellous as it was. All right, now let's just tap in for a minute to the middle ear. And as we go in, we're looking at this little bony structure. Now, many of us have seen this, I'm sure, in our days gone by. Now, we've got the eardrum there, and we've got the hammer, and we've got the anvil, and we've got the little stirrup, the little stapes. So therefore, brothers and sisters, the eardrum is there, and in come the little molecules, tap, 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 on the eardrum or the tympanic membrane. That, of course, then activates the hammer, that activates the anvil, and that activates the stirrup. And the little stirrup's going in and out, in and out, in and out like that, and liquid spinning around inside the inner ear. Talk more about that in a moment. But the amazing thing about this inner ear is that there are lubrication joints. There's a lubrication joint there, and there's a lubrication joint there. Now, I ask you, have you had to go recently to the garage to get that lubricated? Like you do with your car. I haven't had to go. I mean, I've been on this planet for 60 years plus. I haven't had to go to the doctor and say, look, I just need you to get some oil in there or some grease to make sure those little joints are lubricated. It's been with me all those years. And I thought, you know, how could man possibly do this? And I thought about a car that was being built by at the time I was being born. And in Australia, there was this car that was built around the same year that I was born. It is an FX Holden. Now, that Holden, I worked out that if, like our ear, it didn't need lubrication, I worked out that over the 60 or so years of my age, if I bought that when I was an infant, or somebody bought it for me and I had it all these 60 or so years, this car, like my ear, should have been able to go for 1.2 million kilometres without any service to the engine at all. I don't think there's a piece of machinery on earth that could ever do that, maintenance free. How wonderful is our ear and those lubrication joints. All righty. Now let's have a look at the sensitivity of this little eardrum, this tympanic membrane. We have a hearing sensitivity in a range of 1 million to 1. That means we can hear the roar of a jet engine and we can hear the gentle, delightful, faint rustle of leaves on a tree in a warm breeze. What a contrast. 1 million to one is the range. And at 4 megahertz, the eardrum responds to movements, now listen to this, of 1/10 the diameter of a hydrogen atom. That's what the ear can sense. You want to know how small that is? Well, an atom, a hydrogen atom, is 1/5000th of a micron. What does that mean? Well, a micron is 1/1000th of a millimeter. You just look at that for a couple of seconds. An atom is 1/5000th of a micron, and 1 micron is 1/1000th of a millimeter. That's incredibly small, brothers and sisters. Incredibly small. Such is the marvel of that. Now, we've got there, the little tympanic membrane has been tapped by these molecules and it's going inevitably moving through that bone structure, amplifying as they interface. It's then going to move that little stirrup or stapes that's there for a very good reason, transferring, well, pressure there, sound waves there, and transferring it into fluid. And that little stapes or the little stirrup is 7.5 millimetres long and it weighs 3/1000th of a gram. Or, for Americans, it is a stapes that is 3 inches long, this little bone, smallest bone in the body, and it weighs 0.0001 of an ounce. You can pop it on your little finger. It's as light as a feather. And you've been carrying two of them around on the side of your head and they've begun back and forth, spinning all this fluid. All this noise comes in and it's still going. What an amazing thing, brothers and sisters. Well, let's now go in and have a look at this for a couple of minutes, this amazing structure of the inner ear. Now, there, that little section there in this bony labyrinth, there are semicircular balance mechanisms in the inner ear, and we've got this cochlea, they call that, the shell-like substance in there. Now, the little stapes goes in there. It's actually nestled in there and sealed off, that little stirrup, and it's going in and out, in and out. Now, if I took a bottle, filled up the bottle with water, right to the very top, right to the very top, and I put a cork in the top, and I tried to press the cork down and compress the liquid, I couldn't do it. If it was air, I could compress the air. So I filled the fluid right to the top and tried to press it. I could not compress the fluid. Now, when this little stirrup goes in and it's nestled right there, sealed off there, when it goes in, God has created a mechanism whereby the pressure is relieved. And therefore, when that goes in, this little section down here, which is flexible, it pops down, you see? So when the stapes goes in, it's relieved in pressure by that little section underneath there. Now, let's go in to do a cross-section of this little cochlea or this little shell-like mechanism. Now, when you first see this diagram, it's almost like Revelation chapter 12. So don't be overwhelmed. Now, it's very simple. So we've got our tympanic membrane is being tapped by these little molecules. It's then transferred through the interface and amplified through the bones. The little stirrup is moving out, pushing the fluid sealed inside this inner ear. And as the little stapes pushes the fluid, brothers and sisters, the fluid goes up through here, around, around to there, and around, and around, and out, like that. Zoom, and zoom back, as this little stapes is going in and out. So therefore, the fluid goes in and goes out as this little piston is moving in and out. Now, let's zoom in on this little section here and see why fluid's running down one side and fluid's running down the other side. It's all about what's happening in this little chamber which is sealed off again in here. Fluid running up there, fluid coming back there. Why? Well, it's doing something to there. Let's exemplify that, shall we? There it is there. Let's go back. We're looking at that section in there. So let's go back. Fluid goes in there, fluid's coming back out there. Fluids going in there, fluids coming back out there. Why? Well, what it's doing is it's actually pressing down on there and then down on there. Down on there and down on there. Why? Well, what it's doing, brothers and sisters and young people, here's a magnified version of it. Let's expand it even more. What's happening in there as the fluid runs through there and there? It's pressing on here and pressing on there. Well, what's it doing inside there? Well, there's an expanded view. And this is what happens. You see that purple section there, that tectorial membrane? That purple section, imagine, is my hand here. The green section has got all of these hundreds of little silica hairs there. So these little silica hairs, there are hundreds of them, they're kind of like impregnated into this tectorial membrane, this purple bit. Why? Well, here's my hand, which is the purple bit. Here's my fist, which is the green bit. I put that on there. Now, as the fluid flies around and flies back, as this little piston's doing its job because these little molecules are tapping on there and the bones are doing this, there's the purple bit, there's the green bit. I put it on there. Now, this purple bit is fixed. Now, as the fluid's going around, this is what is happening. It's going up and bouncing, and it's rubbing these silica hairs across this purple tectorial membrane and sending signals to the brain. Now, let's zoom in on those silica hairs and see what they do. Now, there's the top of the silica hairs. There's an expanded version of it. There's the top of the hair. There's the top of the hair. Well, these little silica hairs. And what you've got, brothers and sisters, you've got a little gate and you've got a molecular spring. And so on the top of these hairs, what you have is the hairs bend, opening up these little gates. And what these little gates do is they allow ions, which are electrically charged particles, to enter in, which change the electric charge inside the cell. Now, with this little gate, brothers and sisters, this little gate has got to open and close at a rate equal to our highest level of hearing, which is 20,000 times a second. Could you imagine a gate? A little gate, 20,000 times a second. The gate's opening, and in come all of these little ions. What a staggering thing. Now, brothers and sisters, I ask you, you give anybody Einstein's brain squared, if you want, and just ask them how, of all the things in the ear, that little molecular spring was made through the process of evolution. And ask the evolutionist how they would go about making this molecular string, a spring that opens and closes a gate at 20,000 times a second to let ions in to create an electrically charged that goes to the brain, which is then interpreted as sound and then understood as speech. I nearly said unbelievable. It's not unbelievable, of course, is it? It's believable. What an amazing mechanism. Well, brothers and sisters, finishing off, I want to do a little experiment with one of the young persons that we have in the audience. Now, could life evolve by chance? Well, the evolutionists say atoms formed into tiny molecules known as amino acids, which then formed into polypeptides, which then formed into protein molecules, which then interacted somehow to form a single cell. What are the chances of one protein molecule being evolved? What I want to do is I want to grab this little thing over here, whatever it's called, flip chart. See if I can carry it without dropping it anywhere. Oh, I'm so tired. This Bible school's killing me. Okay, all right. Now, what are the chances of one protein molecule evolving? Now, I've got a bag here. And inside this bag, I've got 10 coins, and they're numbered 1 through to 10. What are the chances of me getting somebody to put their hand in the bag and pulling out, first chance, first go, number 1? What are the chances of probability? Well, you're very good. You're very good with math. 1 in 10. All right, let's see how good you are. There's some young people around here. Who wants to have a go? Ah, oh, you boys, you just want the money, that's all. I know, I've done this with lads before. I start off with 10 coins, come back, there's only 1 left. All right. Who wants to have a go? What's your name again? Emily, I should know that, shouldn't I? All right. All right, Emily, you've got one chance in 10. Make it a good one. Want one number one? Don't get excited now. You're getting all anxious. So it's only money. I know I've seen some people get affected by money, just like you are now. You ready? Want one number one. What number is it?
6.
All right, we'll give you another go. Hang on. Only because it's you, Emily. Here we go. One more go. We need one number one. You can do it. What number is it?
3.
One more, Emily. Only one more. One more. We want number one. Oh, heck, we're going backwards. You'll be here all night. Thanks, Emily. That was good. Okay, so a chance. Oh, this is getting very loud. What's happened here? I must even buy those speakers. All righty. Now, what are the chance, brothers and sisters, of Emily putting her hand in the bag, taking out number one, putting the coin back in the bag, shaking it, and then taking out number two immediately following? What are the chances? One in, take out one, put it in, shake, and then pull out two. What are the chances? One in. Excellent. One in 100. Okay, lads, you love a contest. You better do it, because I've had nobody in North America. Could Australia, they do it every day. Oh, what's your name?
Keaton.
Keaton. Say it so I can understand it. What's your name? What's your name?
Caden.
Caden. Can you say Caden? You say it, Caden.
Caden.
Almost. Caden. All right, Caden, number one. Where you go, mate? Number one. Come on, boy. We. Number?
3.
I want you to be the legend of North America. There you go. One more.
10.
Oh, you're going backwards big time. Thanks, Caden. Well done. So, Caden had a chance. He had 1 in 100. Didn't do too well. Now, what are the chance, brothers and sisters and young people, of somebody taking out number one, putting it back, shake the bag, number two, putting it back, shake the bag, number three, putting it back, shake the bag, number four, all the way through to 10. What are the chances? Pardon me? 10 of the 10. Now remember, I don't know what atmospheres are, and I'm struggling with it. Just give it to me. One in what?
1 billion.
One in?
10.
You? What'd you say? Oh, I'm going once. Anybody for this? What the? Once. I'm selling this. Who's going? What was that again? 1 in. That's excellent. What do you do for a living? Pardon me? An actuarial assistant. You should be working for NASA. One, you know, putting that 1 in 10 billion. I mean, that's the probability of 1 in 10 billion. Yeah. That's the probability of just a bag of coins, one after the other. Well, brothers and sisters, that probability of those 10 coins is there. 1 in 10 billion. What are the chances of one protein molecule evolving? Well, the chances are there. And they tell us, brothers and sisters and young people, that we evolved. From intelligent people, we think not. Truly, brothers and sisters and young people, 10 to the power of 321, that's 10 followed by 321 zeros. No way. We are fearfully made, and wonderful are thy works, and what a glorious blessing it is to come to a Bible school like this and to elevate our minds and give glory to our Heavenly Father.